Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour, our roundtable podcast about what we are watching, reading, and listening to. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. On this week's show, everybody except me is just back from Austin, so we'll catch up on South by Southwest and find out whether music, too, is bigger in Texas. Then we'll stick with music to discuss the songs that changed our lives. And as always, we'll close the show with what's making us happy this week, so stick around.
Here's a great way to listen to Pop Culture Happy Hour, NPR One. It's an app for your phone, kind of like Pandora for public radio. It's full of news and podcasts, including this one. Whenever you're ready to listen, NPR One has something great just for you. Find it through your app store. Look for NPRONE.
It's almost time to soak up all the great stuff Texas had to offer our correspondents, but before we get started here in historic Studio 44, let's go around the table. Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I am a writer and editor with NPR Music.
And Audie Cornish, what do you do at NPR?
I am host of All Things Considered.
And with us again, as she was last year at this time, Katie Presley, what do you do?
Many things. I'm a woman about town. Creatively, I am a music writer for Bitch Media and here at NPR.
That's wonderful. As many of you know, our buddy Glenn Weldon is off dealing with the release of his book called The Caped Crusade, which I can recommend.
Glenn truly would deal with something awesome. Instead of celebrating it, he's dealing
it's
with
true.
A massive professional
he
success.
He is dealing with that, the release of his book and the audiobook, which I should say he recorded. And it's so much fun.
Have you gotten to German Glenn yet?
I have a little bit, yeah. So fortunately, Glenn's dealing with his book has overlapped with the return of our correspondents who are in Austin. So we thought that we would talk for a little bit about that. They heard a lot of music. They smelled a lot of people.
We sure did.
Oh, so many.
We were some of those people, let's be honest.
That's right.
You've smelled ourselves.
You've all been smelling yourselves and each other for the last week. So I want to ask Stephen first, why does South by Southwest matter? Why does NPR still send a contingent down there? I heard a thing, which is that you, Stephen Thompson,
yes,
have now gone to 20 consecutive South by Southwest.
20 consecutive South by Southwest. Yeah, I mean, South by Southwest, I mean, you talk about why it matters. It is a gigantic gathering, among many other things, it is a gigantic gathering of the music industry. You have more than 2,000 bands, you have hundreds of thousands of music fans, and you have representatives of every record label and all sorts of tech companies. It's become increasingly diversified to include interactive and film. And it's become this destination for, like, spring break for the music industry. Now, over time, it's also become spring break for spring breakers. Yeah. And so you have a little bit of Mardi Gras overlaid on top of the rest of the festival where the industry is gathering to see all these bands. In terms of why it matters and in terms of why we cover it, it's such a tremendous opportunity for us to all go down and have one-stop shopping for thousands of bands that are making a play for attention. And,
yeah,
you know, Bob Boylan goes to 600 shows a year. I don't. And so it's really an opportunity for me to see. I saw 91 bands in 6 days.
Yeesh.
I believe that. I went out with him one night.
Yeah.
I'm still there in my mind. He texted me a picture of a crumpled piece of paper with, like, serial killer style, like, scribblings of, like, all the bands at different times of the night that he'd be going to. It'd be like 9 o'clock, and then there'd be 15 bands. And I'm like, I don't understand. I'm not getting how many minutes are in an hour anymore. Like, how does
this
work? Yeah, it really was. I thought we were going to travel via elevator.
Yeah.
Magic elevator.
Yeah.
I think my favorite moment of my Audie Cornish ride-along was when we walked into this club. Some of these clubs are terribly configured. They're not really designed to be music clubs. And there's one that has the stage directly next to the front door. And I walked through that door with Audie just as the singer lunged at us.
No.
And it was, and
yeah,
there were several points where I thought I was taking Audie to see some you know, pleasant singer-songwriter, and it would turn out to be...
So did I.
It would turn out to be a punk band called White Reaper.
That's a thing that happened.
That's actually a pretty good
thing.
That
band. Is a thing that happened.
Yeah, uh-huh. I'm sure Audie felt completely at ease. So, Audie, this was your first South by Southwest.
It was.
Is that correct?
It was my first one. We went down in part because it was the 30th anniversary. And even though, as Stephen mentioned, South by Southwest Interactive has basically overtaken the festival in terms of size and certainly in terms of revenue.
In terms of paying customers.
Yeah, in terms of paying customers. Interactive is definitely blowing music out of the water.
But it has fewer, like, randos flooding the streets.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, yeah.
World leader in randos.
Yeah, exactly.
Too soon. Too many randos.
A couple things. So, number one, first impressions. I think that I didn't realize how much of an industry event it was. I went into a bar. The first person I met was a law student casing for prospects to, like, represent bands in publishing and streaming deals, okay? And with, like, I gave away all my business cards. That's not a thing I expected to happen.
Yeah.
And so it did. It was an industry thing. It wasn't my industry. And so that was very intriguing. And seeing Stephen peruse the night in a total, like, sort of mercenary way. You know, like, we'd go to a place, he'd listen to the band for 1 or 2 minutes.
One or two songs.
It was a little long, 1 or 2 songs. And then he'd go, okay, gotta go. And we had these badges so we could sort of skip the lines and see something else. And that was really intense to go to 5-6 clubs in an evening. I mean,
yeah.
I haven't been out, I think, since 1991. So this was really an exciting time for me to
cut up in one night with
Stephen
Thompson.
Yeah, I wore my special youth uniform.
Right.
I had a leather jacket that I found. I also found a pair of Converse sneakers, which I heard some people still wear in the Gen X community.
When you say found, do you mean like on 6th Street?
I have a trunk that's like cool clothes, but with cool begins with a K.
As I razzed you on Twitter, yes. You were all, greetings, fellow teens.
I wore my denims. The other thing is, it's very much, Stephen said Mardi Gras. I actually thought Fashion Week, because there are,
absolutely,
if you think about modern day Fashion Weeks, you can experience them now through Instagram and through social media. And there are all kinds of hangers-on, like people in the street who are performing in the same way that there are, like, fashion and style bloggers who just sort of show up with their own photographer, like, I'm at Fashion Week, look at me, you know, strike a pose, hashtag work. And there was the same thing with
hashtag platforms.
And with South by Southwest, the same thing. You're walking down the street and there's somebody, like, there are people with their squads. There are people posing with the Rolls Royce that their label or someone rented for the day. There's people rolling by with, like, speakers, not a boombox, like a speaker on wheels. I didn't even totally know how it worked. And I think that aspect of it, the carnival aspect of it, was really exciting and sort of fun to experience.
Yeah. Well, Katie Presley, the bio I have here on you, which I don't think you wrote and I didn't write, says you lived in Austin for years before moving in with some idiot last summer.
I could have written it, but no. That is idiot penned.
Yeah, Steven's the idiot. So, what is it like to be there as a longtime resident who has, you know, been forcibly removed? Not forcibly removed.
let's get the record straight. Not forcibly. Katie
not
Presley
dragged
has
away.
More
this is such
free
a romantic
will.
Story.
Not dragged away.
But dragged away.
You know? Mm-hmm. And then gets a chance to come back.
It's funny that you threw to me after Audie's last line, which was, the carnival aspect is really fun. I was like, ooh, first timer. Because, of course, to residents, it's just a takeover. It is dropping the city of Brooklyn into our beloved cowboy town.
Well, when you put it that way.
Cowgirl town. It is fun to experience the city through a visitor's eyes. Bob Boylan loves Austin. Every year he has to be, speaking of dragged, he has to be physically removed to the airport on the day that we're supposed to leave because he wants to be there forever. And that is fun. It's less fun when, you know, entitled idiots litter on your streets and vomit on your shoes when you're trying to go to work, you know? The festival is spread throughout the entire city. Nowhere is safe. This is my 5th South By, so Stephen, actually, I'm jealous that he's been going. He saw Austin 20 years ago. Old timers in Austin are considered people who have been there for 7 years because that's how quickly it turns over.
I think I was hearing also in the last 2 years, Austin has undergone a tremendous amount of growth as a city independent of this, that tens of thousands of people have moved into the city in just like the last 2 years.
Yeah.
I feel like I spent half my time running to shows and half my time standing in front of venues thinking, which club that I loved has been raised and become a metal hell house for...
I don't even know what that is, but I'm assuming it's
everywhere. Not a compliment.
I already have FOMO about whatever that is. Speaking of which, South by Southwest is the only place you can have a fear of missing out while you are there. Like,
yes.
At an event,
oh my God,
you
yes.
are physically
oh,
at.
Absolutely.
You are looking on social media and you're like, I'm here. What? Drake is
exactly.
at Theater Ford? What? Like, this other person is there. A secret set here. Someone's playing in the bottom of the swimming pool. Like, it, no matter where you go, you could
show.
Be somewhere better.
Yeah, that's
it's
interesting.
It really freaked me out as a news person because, mm-hmm. you know, I'm used to being like, where's the news? I will be there. And to give myself over to this environment where basically everything is happening everywhere and you're missing it.
Yeah.
Was
oh, man,
really actually an uncomfortable emotion yes. to experience.
Let me ask you guys, in past years, people have come back and said, oh, you know, it used to be the kind of like ordinary bands, but now it's a place where you can see Kanye and Lady Gaga and people like that. Were there ones this year where it was like, this is not the kind of person who you it used to be would see at South by Southwest?
I think there's a certain amount of that, particularly at places like the Fader Fort, some of these special, very, very, very well-funded mm-hmm. venues that kind of exist almost as little tent cities unto themselves
right, sure.
on the side of South by Southwest, and they're trying to bring in Drake. Even as recently as a few years ago, South by Southwest would try to throw like a massive free show with Coldplay
right.
or a massive free show with Lady Gaga. And I think what happened is that fed into the environment where the crowding became dangerous.
Yeah. Right?
And I think they're trying. I've noticed in recent years there was a terrible fatal crash at
yes.
South by Southwest a couple of years ago. It wasn't because of overcrowding. It was because of a driver going into a crowd. But I think they are trying to make it so that the festival is not laid on top of dangerous throngs.
Right. Well, let's hear some tunes.
Tunes?
I want to hear some hit tunes.
Hit me with some tunes.
Hit me with some fellow teens.
I'm never going to live this down.
Hit me with some tunes. I want to hear Stephen Thompson. I want to hear some tunes.
Well, one of the best live experiences I had, and I wonder how well listening to a studio song even translates compared to the experience of seeing this band live, but I saw a group called the Golden Dawn Orchestra. I counted 18. There might have even been more. There might have been more stashed under the stage, like at a Broadway musical.
And they've got flowy clothes. They kind of blend. They kind of meld and
sway. They do. They meld and morph into each other. Lots of headgear, undulating dancers. And it was one of those things where I started out in the back of the room and couldn't quite see them. And as I moved closer and closer, I was like, oh, this is pretty good. This is pretty good. This is pretty good. And then got where I could see them and was like, oh, I get it. It was also a perfect example of you're playing the game Weed or Smoke Machine.
That is not a game. Yeah. I learned that the hard way.
It's never a smoke machine.
It's never. That's the answer to that. It is never a smoke machine.
I think, it can be two things. Anyway, I really enjoyed the Golden Dawn Orchestra. And we're going to take it a few minutes into this epic jam that starts pretty slowly. Let's hear a little bit of Stargazer.
Listen to this from my minibus, I feel like.
B-side to the Hair soundtrack.
I was just going to say, you can mash this up with Age of Aquarius. That would make a really good, really good mashup with Age of Aquarius.
Yep.
But live, it was this just ludicrous sensory overload of joy.
Yeah.
And you know, later in the festival, I got to see George Clinton presiding over a big version of Parliament Funkadelic. I was there with Katie. And I totally expected this gigantic train wreck. And yet, I was so moved, first of all, just by this wall of noise. There must have been like 30 or 40 people on stage.
Oh my gosh.
Some of whom were performing and some of whom were standing around.
Yep.
But it's a little bit that same thing, this kind of gigantic group that has gotten together to dispense joy unto the world.
Nice.
I'm always a sucker for that.
How about you, Adi? What did you hear that you liked?
Well, one thing I learned about this event, which is about music discovery, is the thing about discovery is that it's very hit or miss. And that, you know, like I like to go thrift shopping, too. That's also about discovery.
Yeah.
And there's lots of times you come home empty handed, which is what happened to me in this case. I did see artists that I thought I loved until I saw them live. And I was like, oh, you cannot sing outside of the studio.
Yeah.
That's what I've just learned.
Yeah.
I saw an artist I think will be great in 5 years, but just quite isn't there yet. Performers I'd only heard in commercials and dismissed as garbage, but turned out to be awesome live. And I'll say the name of this one, The Struts, which they do a commercial. I think it's in a commercial. It feels like it should be, even if it's not. It's a song called Could Have Been Me.
I want to buy headphones.
I was just going to say,
headphones
I just want to shop.
Needless to say, I saw this at the Bud Light Factory showcase.
Did you dig them?
I did, but only because the performer, the lead singer, does this kind of Queen, old school, direct. Yeah. But also, like, went into the crowd and really worked the crowd. And I thought, oh, right, okay, this is why this is a thing. You know, this is why this artist is successful, even though I had sort of dismissed the music because it wasn't my genre, it wasn't my thing.
Sure.
I mean, if you're going to call your band The Struts, you'd better strut.
Yeah, and it was also kind of nice to see one of these sort of post-Strokes era strutting rock bands. No offense to Stephen's music. There's a lot of standing, patiently strumming, giving you emotional experience rock bands. But really, the swag is with hip-hop right now, and that was no different at South by. You know, that is where people would get on stage, and it was just like people came to put on a show.
Yeah.
In the way that really surprised me. I was surprised at how brown South by Southwest is, for lack of a better term. I thought it was going to be a lot of like white guys in clubs nodding.
There's a lot of that.
Other than Stephen.
But I think the music press had sort of led me to believe that that's what South by was, and it wasn't that at all.
Yeah.
And all of the DJs and hip-hop showcases, it just really blew my mind. One other thing that happened is because you could hear music sort of randomly, one of the places I did hear music I loved was in my hotel, which I staggered back to one afternoon, and these two women, Lily and Madeline, were playing.
We swam in the hotel pool, said, yeah, we made it for sure. It felt like some new treasure that we didn't deserve.
So I think that being able to experience music anywhere and be moved by it was a fun experience, even if sometimes those late nights didn't quite pan out for me.
Yeah, we've talked in the past about the experience being, for Stephen, a little bit uneven, in that sometimes it's people who are playing in those more out of the way, not as cool, or in the case of Kishibashi, who we talked about 1 year, not even in the festival, like playing at an auxiliary thing and turned out to be, it's just my personal opinion, totally awesome. And then the following year was great and in a Windows commercial.
Nothing wrong with commercials.
No.
We actually, for the show, we're doing a piece about how the brokers, the music brokers who get the songs to the commercials are like kind of the rock stars of the festival now.
Sure.
And how they said, we used to be pariahs and now we get people coming up to us with a million questions. How do I sell orange juice? How can I do original music? Can I do it without anyone knowing that I'm doing it? Like, I'll do it for hardly any money if you put the band name on the screen.
Yeah.
So that was like actually an intriguing part of it. Like the sellout thing is out the window.
Right, totally. How about you, Miss Katie? What did you see?
Getting to the festival, I just kind of stayed home. And I mean that in a couple of ways. I stayed close to home, I should say. I listened to a lot of Texas bands. I caught up with friends' bands and other local bands that I love. Charlie Bell is a band, a young band I wrote about and adore, that's doing some really interesting things. At the ripe age of 15 and 17, they're taking a new direction, and that's really fun. They're young and, like, can do anything they want.
I told you I love you. You told me that's exactly what you didn't want me to do. Now there's mud tracks from your shoes. Wherever you
I also saw a ton of queer bands, and I just wanted to live in those places. I just, like, wanted to stay with my tribes. The first is an R&B singer named Kehlani out of Oakland.
Oh, saw her.
She's remarkable, and she is also a young woman and has lived five lives in the music industry already. She was in a group called Pop Life with a Y, one word.
Oh, yeah. I vaguely know who that is.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Really?
They were on America's Got Talent. And
that's what I was thinking of. Yeah, I almost said TV talent show.
She got the only feedback the group got, which was, you should drop the rest of this band and go solo. Like, four other poor people standing around her. And she took it to heart and went solo, but had some ups and downs with deals that fell through. I didn't see very much R&B this year, and she really nailed it. So let's listen to You Should Be Here by Kehlani.
Can't tell that you are disconnected. You pulled away and I miss your presence. I always said to you, baby, you should be here, right here, baby. You should be here, right here.
Audie reminded me while we were listening that the dance moves were risque. I must have been too far back to see.
My bar for risque is also a
little too.
I'm being honest.
They successfully located their hips.
Right, exactly.
Yep.
It's interesting that you should say tribe, though, because it is almost like that scene in The Warriors where all of, The Warriors 79 crazy movie about, like, the guys who have to travel from Coney Island all the way back home.
Okay.
You are all going to get tweeted now from Warriors fans because this movie is tremendous.
I didn't say it wasn't.
It involves costuming. It involves being gangs in New York. And I felt like South by Southwest, like, you would walk by, like, the South by South West Americas, you know, or the jazz one or the weed heads one. And everywhere you went, you would just step into a room and be in a completely different scene.
Yeah.
There are so many South by Southwest.
Or a new scene would come around you, because some of these showcases, including NPR's, were idiosyncratic in how they were programmed. So you would see the most random mix of acts over the course of 4 hours and the crowd would change around you.
Yeah.
What else have we got? What else should we listen to?
I had another quintessential South by experience to discover my other pick to listen to. I was washing my hands in a club, that rare event that gets to happen every once in a while at South by. I had just seen Spook School on Steven's recommendation and was sticking around to later see Sick of Sarah, which was recommended by my friend Michelle. And I was washing my hands and the person next to me said, "What are you here to see?" And I said, "Oh, I just finished Spook School. They were great." And they said, "Stick around for 20 minutes. I promise you a good time." And it was like, I realize I said that in a really geeky white lady way, but it was like very seductive and awesome. And I was like, yes, I will go to there. And I stuck around. And that ended up being ironic. I'm going to spell her name because it's unique. It's lowercase I, caps lock, raw, lowercase N-I, capital Q.
Oh, ironic. It is ironic, I see. I gotcha.
This was one of the trends. There were a lot of dropped vowels and a lot of really odd capitalization.
A lot of all caps.
Which I think works in social media. But when you were trying to tell people who you saw, you're like, "I saw Groovix McHouse."
Right.
All caps.
All caps.
Except for the fourth X. So Ironic is from Grand Rapids, Michigan, and she reps hard for Michigan, though she now lives in L.A. She's gender fluid. She's super fierce, no nonsense, in a very intelligent, analytical way.
Yeah.
The crowd really loved her. Her dancers were mega hot, and I love... Man, I'm such a hypocrite. They're basically the dancers were just grinding up on her the whole time, and they were all just touching each other. And if she had been male and they had been women, I would have been like, stupid. But they were all ladies.
Listen, you're self-aware. That's really right. The first step. Uh-huh. That's the first step.
What else have you got, Stephen?
I've got a singer whose work I really, really loved. While preparing the Austin 100, I just stumbled across this 2-minute song called Creek Time. And it started out as this very soft, like picking a banjo, got a little bit of that just folky front porchy vibe. And over the course of less than 2 minutes, this song just deconstructs and spins out with all these effects and samples, and the song just takes off and it just zooms off the runway in this really beautiful way. And there's just this whole experience in the span of 2 minutes. Let's hear Creek Time by a singer from New York named Odetta Hartman.
I put my chips on the table. Dream times on a tightrope cable. Well, truth be told, this ain't no fable.
And eventually it just speeds up. Mm-hmm. And just kind of implodes. And I was really curious, only having heard that one song, only having heard 2 minutes, what is her set going to be like? And it was a lot like that.
Yeah.
I loved it. She started out with a fiddle, switched to an electric guitar, and then switched to a banjo, while her partner, a guy named Jack Inslee, sat next to her with a laptop and orchestrated all these effects, like put effects on her voice, created beats, ran through all these samples. And it was really like it was constantly threatening to fly off the rails, and yet there were so many ideas in it and so many interesting ideas in it, and her voice was so powerful that I personally just loved it.
She also ran out of songs.
She
and
did.
It did drive home to me the idea that these are baby bands.
Yeah.
Like a lot of times these are baby performers, mm-hmm. and they've got a few things, they've put it together, but because of the accelerated pace of the music press and the blogging scene, I think the pressure to sort of do well when people are interested sometimes does get you out there before you're ready. And I'm not saying that about this artist. She was an excellent live performer. But I did see performers where I thought, okay, once you're done making that handful of songs.
Right.
Yeah.
Finish cooking.
Yeah.
Well, I have learned a lot about music that I can perhaps listen to. And if you are still curious about music from Austin, we'll direct you in the blog post at Monkey C to a bunch of these bands. And then also, you can still listen to the Austin 100. You can still stream it from the site, and you can, until March 31st, you can still download it. I appreciate all you guys filling us in, and let us know what you think of all the bands that we found. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet at us at PCHH. When we come back, we're going to have a quick talk about songs that changed our lives. So come right back.
Let's take a moment to thank and share a message from our sponsor, Sotheby's Institute of Art. What exactly is the true value of art? If you want to work in the art world or understand how galleries, auction houses, and art investments operate, consider an education at Sotheby's Institute of Art, the Graduate School of Art and its markets. From fully accredited master's degrees in art, business, and contemporary art to continuing education courses. With campuses in New York, Los Angeles, London, and online. Register or apply now at sotheby'sinstitute.com.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. Before the break, we were talking about music in the context of South by Southwest. And now we're going to talk about music in the context of, you know, the life-changing thing that it is. We're calling this segment Songs That Changed Our Lives. Now, Stephen, before we start this segment, you wanted to acknowledge...
that I stole this idea from a coworker.
Yeah. You wanted to acknowledge that you stole this idea from a coworker, sort of. Half. It's an homage.
It's an homage.
Sort of.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a loving homage.
That's right.
Which means if you give him the
tribute.
Plug,
it's a tribute.
It's okay. Explain.
Our colleague Bob Boylan, host of All Songs Considered and My Dear Pal, has a book coming out next month called Your Song Changed My Life. And it's where he interviews a whole bunch of musicians from across many spectrums and says and tries to get at like what song inspired you the most.
Sure.
And I thought I could steal that idea for Pop Culture Happy Hour and we could do a quick round robin where we each do a quick little tale of a song that changed our lives.
Hit me.
I brought a song that helped me immensely as a first-time parent. I had never held an infant until 10 weeks before my older child was born and was very, very, obviously very, very new to it. And the first time I was bouncing my infant son in my arms, I started singing along to the song Who Dat?
No.
By JT Money with special guest Soleil.
You picked this song.
You
did it.
And to this day, whenever I hold a baby, I immediately now I changed
yeah,
up
do.
I changed up the lyrics a little bit. Let's first hear the song.
They played this at the hospital? Like, I'm so confused.
No, I mean, just probably I heard it, like, stuck in my head.
Oh, okay.
At some point. And I did. I changed up the lyrics. I just want you to know, to
good
be honest.
Good for you.
I modified them slightly. It went, ah, yeah, with each syllable bouncing the child.
Right.
And then rock back and forth going, hooda, 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 hooda.
Listener, he is holding his hands in a way
that implies
he is holding a small child.
Yeah. Basketball?
In a dangerous way,
burrito.
But holding one nonetheless.
Yeah.
That is actually, Katie, how I hold a large burrito
Don't
as well.
Don't hand him your infant. Yeah.
I will hold a large burrito with the same loving care that I treat an infant.
Oh, Steven.
But anyway, that song has really become part of like the lore of when I think about being a new parent to very, very small children. And like I said, anytime I carry a baby, that song floods into my head. Not some lullaby, not Hush Little Baby, but Who Dat by JT Money.
Audie Cornish.
Top it, please.
I can't top it, but I do identify with one thing Steven said, which is he picked a song that connects to a moment that fundamentally changed who you were in that moment, right? Like kind of finding, you thought of yourself as a different person.
I became a rapper.
And for me, the song I chose came out in July of 98, and it's Doo-Wop, That Thing by Lauryn Hill. Mm. Let's hear a little bit of it.
To the man, more concerned with his rims and his Timbs and his women. Him and his man come in the club like hooligans. Don't care who they fed, popping yang.
Like you got yang.
Let's not pretend. The one to pack pissed out by the waistman, crissed out by the casement. Still the name of this basement. The pretty face man claiming that they did a bid, man. Need to take care of their 3 and 4 kids. Been the face in court.
I love it. I love it. Okay, so here's the thing. I grew up, obviously, like, 90s music scene, but this was, like, the first time I heard music that actually spoke to who I was as a person. And I heard it when I was entering college. And it really got at sort of how I thought about the world, and it didn't make that thinking out to be nerdy or uncool. And I really appreciated that. And she references things in the song like the Million Women March, which I had actually been to the year before. And it was a song that was like about self-love and self-respect, but it didn't like ask for those things. It sort of commanded those things. She was like, I'm Lauryn Hill. I'm here. What? You know, like, where have you been? And I think like Radiohead's OK Computer, which also came out roughly the same time, that album like obviously deeply affected just like kind of a generation of music makers and music lovers. And I feel like I hear Lauryn Hill in the modern writing about race and social commentary, and when I see like young women online with these hashtags like Black Girl Magic and things like that, I feel like we're Lauren's children, you know, yeah. like that she mm-hmm. went into the pop world and was like, it's okay to have brown skin and your nose the way it is and be into hip hop and also understand that there are parts of the music that you don't agree with and that there's room for you in these spaces and in these rooms. And it was just so important. And it was funny, I had a hard time figuring out what song changed my life. And when I thought about it, I tried to think of a moment, like, what's a song actually that was the soundtrack to when I became who I was? Mm-hmm. This is what I came back to.
Yeah.
And it holds up. Like, yeah. if you put this album on, I think in any room or space, and even with a generation that didn't grow up with it, they will stop.
Yeah.
It's very much, I think, an album that deserves, like, every accolade and every kind of, like, description of it being seminal and things like that.
Wow.
See, there's your profound pick.
I was just going to say.
I'm so deeply moved by it.
And it predated Who Dat by 1 year.
Yeah, yeah. I mean.
So y'all were evolving at the same
time. We were. Clearly at a different pace.
Audie was almost done. Stephen was.
This story is, Stephen's story is good because I know your children and they're amazing. So obviously all of that shaking didn't have a,
didn't shake
a problem.
I bobbed them gently.
Right. Who dat?
You shook their brains.
Yeah. I appreciate that, Audie. Yeah. That is legitimately a wonderful story. Katie Presley.
Yeah, it sounds like all of us sort of did a lot of thinking about how a song can change your life. And I, too, the first probably 5 songs that were my knee-jerk reaction songs didn't change who I was. They gave me something that I needed to be who I was at the moment. So I really had to dig for a little while to think of a song that I was one person before I heard this song and I was another after it worked on me. So the song I picked is Whale by a band called Yellow Ostrich, and it was put on a mixtape for me by a friend. And this song arrived, and I was taking a walk at sunset on the mountain, on the volcano where I lived in Portland. I lived on a volcano. And I wrote down 3 sentences while listening to this song on loop, and it became a novel that I have.
And what?
She topped it.
And so this is the song that turned me into a grown-up writer. It turned me into a capital W writer. The novel's not done. The novel is sitting on my desk, gathering dust. I think of it often.
Of course.
And I love it, and I will return to it. And this is what I listen to kickstart. All it takes is listening to the first 5 seconds of the song to kickstart. The whole story comes flooding back.
Well, come with me, whale. We will go far into the blue. I will take you. Listen to me, then you will see, then you will see. Whale, don't worry, whale, just do as you please. I will accept if you'd rather leave. Open my heart, you open your heart, open your heart.
Two years after first hear, capital F, capital H, first hearing, I found myself dating a dummy. And I had been a fan of this dummy and his writing for some time and met him at a show at South by Southwest and approached him and knew him as a music writer. Yada, yada, yada. Turns out he wrote the Song of the Day article about this song, which is how my friend knew about it to put it on a mixed CD for me. So I didn't know that at the time. I completely credited her. And the next time I saw her, I was like, God, you know what song I can't stop listening to? Whale. And she said, yeah, NPR did something about it.
Guys.
Gross. I know. So gross.
Repulsive.
Gross. Katie Presley. What a wonderful story. Thank you, ma'am. I always go last, and it's really difficult in a situation like this.
So I picked We Built This City.
No.
That actually would be amazing.
That would be so great.
No, but you will be surprised. I'm just going to play it, and then I'll explain it.
I am the monarch of the sea, the ruler of the Queen's Navy, whose praise Great Britain loudly chants.
And we are his sisters and his cousins and his aunts.
And they are his sisters and his cousins and his aunts. His sisters and his cousins and his aunts.
So that is from Gilbert and Sullivan's HMS Pinafore. Specifically, that is the 1948 recording by the Doily Cart Opera Company. I picked this because this is the first thing I ever sang in public. Was
you
in.
You sang this in public?
I believe I was in sixth grade, and the musical that we did was a collection of things from different things. Mm-hmm. So we did not do Pinafore. We did a few things from Pinafore, and I was the sea captain, and I wore white pants and a blue blazer, and I had a little sea captain
oh
hat.
My God.
Oh,
oh
my captain, my captain.
A little sea captain hat, and Stephen's like, where are the photos?
Pics, or it didn't happen.
Exactly.
But it did. And that's the first thing that I sang in public, and it's one of the first things I did in terms of, like, doing performances mm-hmm. or anything like that. But I always wanted to, right? So for me, this moment in my life represents the beginning of what became a lifelong struggle between I wanted people to pay attention to me, but I couldn't stand it. And it sort of, like, became this, like, push-pull through doing – I did tons of plays, and I did tons of, like – I did musicals in middle school, and I did musicals at camp, and I did – a cappella in college, as we've talked about a bunch of times, and
so
other things.
You can,
things.
Like, sing.
Enough to do that in the sixth grade. But
I can barely speak, so I'm totally into this. We're going to have a few drinks.
So, yep. So, it evolved throughout my life, right, to the point where I auditioned for the music school at Oberlin, and I was not nearly good enough, which I knew as soon as I went to Oberlin anyway after I didn't get into the music school. And as soon as I met people who were in the music school, I was like, oh, that was a ridiculous idea. Then I became a writer, right? And then I sort of stopped being willing to be out in public and, like, do anything where people could actually, like, see me and interact with me and stuff. And it wasn't until, like, I went back and started doing radio and podcasts and live events and stuff like that. Like, so I see this, as I was thinking about it, I suddenly realized that I see this song and this one performance as the beginning of this really weird relationship with attention and people looking at you and mm-hmm. things that I have super complicated experiences with. So when people, like Audie, sometimes have to help life coach me, I think about all of these important moments, and Gilbert and Sullivan is one of the
this
things
is
that
fascinating because yeah, like now you're in the perfect place, because as we know, radio fame
right.
is the best kind of fame.
It's sort of
no
true.
One can see you.
It's sort of true. It's sort of true.
But you can run your mouth.
It's sort of true.
Very loudly and
right?
get a lot of attention.
And who doesn't like that? So that is the song that changed my life. And when we come back, we are going to get to our favorite segment of this week and every week, what is making us happy this week. So stick around.
Support for Pop Culture Happy Hour comes from LearnVest. LearnVest is an online financial advice company focused on empowering people nationwide to make smart decisions with their money. If you want to know how aggressively to pay down your student loans, LearnVest can help with that. If you want to know how much you should put aside for saving or contribute to your retirement account, yep, they're on it. They'll create a custom financial plan. Plus, they pair you with a financial planner to help keep you on track. To see a sample plan and get a $50 credit, go to learnvest.com/happy.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It is time for our favorite segment of this week and of every week. What is making us happy this week? Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week, buddy?
Well, I've got a little grab bag. One is, of course, from Austin. I do want to throw people to NPR Music's South by Lullabies, in which Bob Boylan chases down artists late at night and has them perform one song in the quietest possible setting to sort of send us into that good night.
It's less kidnappy than you just made it sound.
it's like 40% less kidnappy.
Yeah, true.
There's one the band Mount Wolf performed in Bob's hotel room.
Okay, it's a little kidnappy.
but this year we collected seven of them. The soul singer Timmy Thomas, Declan McKenna, Mia Folick, Mount Wolf, an Israeli group called Ewa, Maren Morris, this wonderful country singer, and the group Lucius, who were born to do this kind of thing. Those are all living on the NPR Music site. They're all beautiful, just as they were beautiful when we did a bunch of them last year. I'm incredibly excited about the return in April of The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Yes!
Season 2 is coming April 15th,
sure is.
And I am so here for that. And finally, right as I was about to leave for South by Southwest, I got a press download of a record I had no idea would exist until the moment it arrived as a press download. It is by a trio called Case Lang Veers.
Oh.
And those names are Nico Case, Katie Lang, and Laura Veers, who individually are wonderful. and are suddenly working together and touring together. It's just one of those like comic book team ups, like what if?
Mm-hmm.
What if these three wonderful performers just got together and made a beautiful record? The first single that's floating around, which is the one that we can actually share with you, is it's marvelous. You'll hear all three of their voices in the first 20 seconds. Let's hear a little bit of Atomic Number.
I'm not the freckled man.
I'm not the fair-haired girl.
I'm not a pail of milk for you to spoil.
Why are the wholesome things the ones we make up seem?
Land words across my heart, symbols of infinity, elements so pure.
I love that you really can pick out all three of those uh-huh. voices mm-hmm. very distinctly. And part of it is that I've spent years and years loving the music of all three of those people. All three of their sensibilities live there within just that little excerpt we heard.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. Great picks. Audie Cornish, what is making you happy this week?
Okay, so this is a little bit of a weird one, but I have started reading Tolstoy's War and Peace.
Naturally.
And yep. I know
as one does,
as one is wont to do. And I know there is a miniseries.
There is, and I have not seen it, but some people that I like very much have liked
yeah,
it.
Yeah, people have been saying good things about it. I have not seen the miniseries on TV, but I decided to tackle it for a couple of reasons. One, because on the Kindle, I'm not a big Kindle user. And as it turns out, books that have, like War and Peace, that have long stretches of translation and multiple languages, the copy that I'm reading, I think it's Pavir and Volohonsky. Barry Hardiman out there is listening and probably cringing. But these are translators who leave in Tolstoy's sections of original French or German. And on a Kindle, you can just like tap the little footnote thing with your finger and then it pops up. So it allows you to not have to like flip around or do anything that takes you out of the story. And so it's been a sort of interesting way to read a book. I haven't like utilized any of an e-reader's features before in this way. And second of all, I read that Tolstoy, like that it was published as a serial. And so suddenly I thought, oh, wait, you're not supposed to read it all at once. Like even when it came out, you know, the Russians that read it like a bit at a time. So like I'm on page 153. I've been reading it for 6 or 7 weeks. Like, mm-hmm. I'm really just taking my time and I read each little chapter for what it is. Like, I'm in that episode and then I'm done. And I'm trying to be more forgiving with myself about reading and how I read. I read so much for work that sometimes by the time I sit down for a book for pleasure, I'm exhausted and yeah. I can't get through it. Mm-hmm. And it's been really nice to, like, just kind of take a little nip of this thing each night and not feel guilty about it, you know, and not feel like War and Peace, you know, like, what was I thinking? So that's what's making me happy.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Audie Cornish. Katie Presley.
About a month and a half ago, Bitch Magazine came to me offering me a guest editorship of the music section of their print magazine. I previously have written reviews for the magazine and write regularly for the blog, but have never taken on an editorial role. And I was offered one, and it's just for this upcoming issue. It's the money issue. I'm also so happy about the content. I have great roster of fabulous writers. I think not a single one of whom has written for Bitch before. So lots of new voices.
Wonderful.
We're covering tons of new music. And just as an example of a couple of the records that we're covering, PJ Harvey has a new record, Tao and the Get Down, Stay Down, Taco Cat, great Seattle group. And then a Kuwaiti musician-producer named Fatima Al-Qadiri that I had never heard of and was pitched to me. The album is fascinating. It's a really angry record. She's processing rage. It's an album about the insidious nature of racism and how she has experienced throughout her life. She was born in Senegal, raised in Kuwait, and now lives in Europe. And so really fascinating work. I have never heard anything like it. And to bring it all around, the writer and the person who pitched me that piece and wrote that piece is here at NPR. Her name is Mina Tavakoli. So It all comes together. We're one big, happy music covering family.
We are. That's wonderful. Thank you very much, Katie Pressley. What is making me happy this week? I just got a couple of little things to mention. Our friend Jesse Thorne, who does Bullseye. You like Bullseye. We like Bullseye.
We do.
Had Dick Van Dyke on his show this week. And it is delightful. Jesse, like a lot of us, sort of worships Dick Van Dyke, but that's not the agenda of the interview, which is also really nice. Gives him a hard time about the accent in Mary Poppins, as everybody else does, and talks about just a whole bunch of things. It's a really delightful interview. Also, friend of the show, Josh Gondelman, who did a live show with us, also has a new record out called Physical Whisper, which is a comedy. Josh is a comedian who also writes for Last Week Tonight and is just a lovely human being, which it's funny because that's what everyone says about him when they write about him. They say, he's so nice, but it's true. But the record is also really, really funny. So it was a delight to listen to that. And also, as I mentioned earlier, Glenn is not here because he is out working on the release of his book. And I wanted to mention that on the 29th of March, for those of you who are local to the D.C. area, on the 29th of March, Glenn and I will be together at Kramer Books in D.C. talking about his book and talking about Batman and Superman and having a grand old time, and I'm super excited about it. So those are the things that are making me happy this week. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen. You can follow Audie at NPR Audie. And you can follow Katie at Love is Maroon, M-A-R-O-O-N, Love is Maroon. You can follow our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy, and our producer emeritus and music director, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music, which you are tapping your foot to right now. So thanks to all of you guys for being here.
Thanks, y'all.
Thank you. What great fun. And thanks to all of you for listening, and we'll see you right back here next week.
Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour. Check out NPR's Bullseye with Jesse Thorne, a terrific guide to what's good in pop culture. Every week, Jesse Thorne interviews people like Elvis Costello, Elizabeth Banks, and Spike Lee about their creative work and lives. Find your new favorite TV shows, books, movies, and music, and gain new insights into the things you already love. Find Bullseye now at npr.org/podcasts and on the NPR One app.